for how much she tormented him. I had to do something.
I nod.
I had to help end it.
I nod again, using my silence to encourage her to fill the space with carefree words and thought.
I went to Dustin,
she states, and I hiss through my teeth, closing my eyes to her deadly confession.
I cared enough to tell him the boy wasn't his, that Luca and Madeline were having an affair. I did it for him, for your dad, and for you. You deserved better, Clay. So I got rid of the temptation of that child and that woman.
Christ.
But they kept him alive, didn't they?
She shakes her face on an exaggerated sigh.
Kept him alive, and here we are. I would have killed him myself if I was Dustin. That would have been easier for everyone.
She points her long, slender finger at me, drowning in the laced whiskey depths.
That is what you should do. As boss, finish it. You should dispose of him for me.
I am dangerously still. Christ. Did you just ask me to kill my half-brother? What have you just done, mother? The heat from agony clings to my throat as I lean towards her, elbows meeting my knees, eyes drilling holes through her. Stunning woman, cold as ice. She can't see much right now. Her eyes are glassy, lost in the memory, in her dark truths, in her uncaring recall. Loyalty is black and white. My brows pinch at the sight of the woman who birthed me. A blunt pain hits my chest like a fist thrusting through my ribs to seize my beating heart for not seeing her true colours before, not questioning her. She betrayed my father, hurt my brothers, and set the entire feud between Nerik and Butcher into action. All the bad blood stems from her, a catalyst. How much of my brother's trauma is because she couldn't love them? My mother sips her spiked whiskey sloppily, spilling some on her blouse, hardly noticing when the liquor seeps in, spreading through the white fabric like her lies. Did you enjoy hurting your sons? I finally break the stillness. My voice is deeper and coarse, as though the whiskey was mixed with gravel. It's the anguish, my hand forced. Did you enjoy it, or are you ashamed?
Ashamed? I was disciplining them as best I could. They were wild, horrible to me. It was all on me.
She trails off and then bounces back in.
They were bad seeds. Bad kids. Their father is bad, too.
I nod at Q, and he leaves the room while she continues to talk and moan. I stare at her in her mumbling, slack state, disappearing for a moment into darkness. As I consider her closely, panning my gaze over the expensive Cosa Nostra-bought jewellery and the flawlessly applied makeup, she slips further into a mindless place. When her body slumps to the side, her spine slides down awkwardly. I want to excuse you, mother. Damn it, she is my blood, a butcher. I want to pardon her. The thing about loyalty is that it is black and white. You are either loyal or you are not. I rise. reached to my full height. Rounding the table in front of us, I approach her. I grip the sofa on either side of her body, hovering close. She's asleep, soundless, peaceful, and for a moment she looks harmless, and I despise her even more for her spite in this condition than when she is spitting hatred. Despite her stunning features that always confused me, that once made me hopeful that deep down beneath the layers she may be vulnerable. I understand, Mother. A sweep of blonde hair from her face. You're a woman trapped in a man's world, overlooked and undervalued, choked by the neglect of misogyny and left to decay. Your sense of the Cosa Nostra, of loyalty, of love, has decayed with you, Mother. There is no coming back. I can't trust you. That is the bottom line. Does her presence scare you, little dear?
I don't want her anywhere near us.
With that recall, I lift her feet to gently rest on the sofa, positioning her comfortably as though she were merely asleep, not drugged by her son, not drunk. Then I retrieve the black pillow set perfectly into a diamond by her head and place it over her face, pressing down hard. No retaliation, no twitching, no response. The drugs have snatched all the fight from her limbs. Staring emptily at the dark fabric over her face, I find myself transported back to that hospital room from more than a decade ago, feel darkness take over, sense hot tears spill down my face, hate them.
Butchers don't cry.
I press down on the pillow.
Bronson was such a wimp.
I know the truth.
You have always looked at me as though you wanted to protect me from this entire world.
I asked the questions.
You should dispose of him for me.
And I am making her liable.
Make the tough calls.
Baring my teeth, crunching them together until they ache within my jaw, I apply more of my weight to the back of the pillow, smothering my mother as the clock ticks slowly over and over, dragging the seconds into minutes until her lifeless essence and bitter memory is all that remains.
What you did today was only the start,
she says, and I listen to her. I always listen.
You are not like everyone else. You are better. One day, it will be your job to weed out betrayals, to finalize loose ends, to make the tough calls. Chapter 33. Fawn.
I need you, little dear. Open your mouth.
I'm woken by his fingers sliding down the slit between my lips and the dangerous need in his voice. I'm on my side. My head is by the edge of the bed. I can tell it is late by the humming of the air conditioner as it breaks through the quiet. With my eyes still closed, a moan slips from me as I part my lips for him, accepting his finger between my teeth. He dips two long forefingers down the length of my tongue, provoking my mouth to salivate around the salty digits. He's slow, tense. His breaths are heavy but controlled. I don't gag. Instead, undulating my tongue up and against them, showing off my skills, wanting his praise.
That's my good little girl.
He growls, his voice sounding deeper, harder, cold. The way he said it didn't sound the same as before. It sounded disconnected.
Keep your eyes closed. Don't defy me tonight.
Something feels wrong. His fingers leave my mouth wanting when he slides his hand back to take a firm hold of the nape of my neck. At the feel of his cock rubbing wetly against my lips, I force them wider to accept his entire smooth crown. Chills rush along my spine. The flavors of his skin, a salty male musk that causes my mouth to water, fills me with arousal that seeps down to my toes. I curl them as he slowly deepens his penetration, but he is too controlled, too slow. My arousal is suddenly mixed with the twitching of nerves as dark, formidable energy circles me and him, and I nearly gag, so I concentrate, my throat closing around the crown and my breathing becoming hard and strained through my nose. He's dark tonight. An aura to him that has my thighs clenching, my skin flushing with a fever, and my heart galloping between my ears. I don't dare open my eyes. Don't risk a glance, focusing on the slow penetration in the depth of my throat. I lift my hands to brace myself on his thighs by my face.
No.
He snaps hoarsely, and my heart stalls before it quickens.
Hands down. Don't touch me.
I would have preferred a slap to the face. My strength and self-confidence are squashed at the bite in his timbre. I cower slightly, but fight my innate response to pull away, ask what's going on, and beg him to let me in this time. Tell me he loves me. That it's okay, sweet girl. I love you. I'm just angry. Something happened. Always about me. I'm not a fucking Harlow, weak and needy, chasing after boys that don't want me, desperate for the crumbs. I'm more than that, and I need to rise above my own self-doubt, ignore the way his tone shrinks me, and stifle the insecurities that wrestle to consume me. I have to fight my old self. Be the woman he believes me to be, the one he needs, because Clay Butcher won't forever live alone with the darkness inside him. I will cradle him and his evil. My tongue pulses below a thick vein, trailing it as he slides in and out slowly. The pace is killing me, hurting. It is so methodical, lifeless. I squeeze my eyes, fighting to keep them closed when I'm desperate to open them, to see his face, see the pain I hear in his voice flash within his eyes, the hurt that is plain in his distance. I whimper my sadness, but accept the way he's using my mouth, accept the way he is.
Oh, fuck.
I ball my hands into fists by my chest. Needing more passion, so I start to suck and mouth him. His teeth clench in response, the sound of them grinding loud even through my drumming pulse. He doesn't deny me the pace I desire, groaning,
"Very well, little dear, make me come."
I work my neck and head, taking him deep, drawing out the smooth, plush head flopping and bobbing. I dive down again, my movements desperate and needy, while his tight grip on my neck is unyielding and distant. Tears squeeze out of my closed eyes, quickly streaming down my face, wetting me and his cock.
"You think you can handle my evil, sweet girl?"
He taunts. And it hurts, but his anger isn't for me. His need is. "I know it. I know it," I chant. Oh, God. What has happened tonight, sir? Where are you? Frightened by his remoteness, by his cruel, provocative air, I use my mouth to prove I can handle any part of him, all of him, even as my heart aches and my tears fall. I can handle his evil. I can. His breath suddenly jerks, his hips buck, and he squeezes my nape until I whimper under the pressure. He holds my mouth wide around his root, the length of him down my throat, his cum pulsing out hard and fast.
Suck it all out of me, little dear. You want it. Swallow all my fucking evil, like a good girl.
The first sign of passion between all his stony detachment comes out as his body shakes. His teeth snap on a growl, and I swallow around the deep penetration, accepting him and his evil, drinking both in. Barely finished, he stills. I fight to breathe, keep my hands in fists, obediently squeeze my eyes. Silently, he backs away, his cock sliding from the depths of my throat, leaving me gasping. I sit up with a start, drawing in air and allowing myself to sob, unable to restrain it. I blink the tears. It's dim in the room, but I cover my face anyway, peeking through the gaps in my fingers and seeing his blurry silhouette walk from the bedroom through the pools of my tears. Chapter 34. Fawn.
She did it,
he utters, sensing me or hearing me as I press my shoulder to the bedroom wall, having searched the entire mansion for him after he left, and now finding him in a strange room that smells of perfume.
She did everything they accused her of doing, and more.
Wariness ripples through me. As he moves around the all-white and grey bedroom, his gait is slow, meaningful. Two walls have 3D embossing, geometric patterns in the white plaster. No room in this house is boring and flat. They all have dimensions. He scans the lavish space, looking at nothing and everything as though for the first and last time. I came to tell him he hurt me, but find him suffering more pain than I'm in. He stops by the closet door and runs his palm down the red material of a dress hanging on the door. It's her dress. I can tell by the fabric, the column style. I try to keep my breaths shallow, concerned my panting will stir, awaken, or spook whatever dark entity is circling him. What happened tonight?
She confessed,
he hisses out, stopping to touch a bottle on the bedside drawer. His touch is stiff.
To beating my brothers. To despising them.
He winces.
Christ. She hated them. How did I not see that before?
Past tense. Hated. Hated? I hardly have the will for words, feeling his testimony on his tongue, hearing it in his deadly timbre, seeing it before me as he touches things, his fingertips collecting memories.
She was the informant, sweet girl. She told Narek, your father, that his son wasn't his.
Rounding the bed now, he stops. He sits on the edge, facing the door and stares at me, frozen in the jam. I straighten under his gaze. Where is she? Clay makes a pyramid with his hands, resting his fingers on his lower lip. His gaze is vacant. A swamp of darkness moves across his eyes, growing the pupils until nothing but thin rings of blue remain. Where is she? This is where she was staying, but it's after midnight and the house is quiet. Even the halls were empty of house staff. I blink at him. My heart tells me to go to him, cradle him, kiss him, use my voice, but something stops me. He eyes me.
She was responsible for it all. She was the reason Connor was locked away, the reason Dustin loathed us. But she was still my mother, little dear, just like Jimmy. I had affection for her.
I swallow over the lump in my throat. Past tense. Was. Was your mother?
Yes.
He says, a chilling utterance that slithers inside my ears and delivers the answer without further words. Yes. Was.
She asked me to dispose of Connor. She wants the bastard gone.
Oh my God. Wrestling with my feet, I will them to move towards him. They do, taking me closer, steady and slow, and I feel the way he tracks my movements. He is too still now that I am closer, as though he is unsure whether it is safe for him to move.
She told me to make my sons hard.
He mentions, emotionless. No. No, I say, taking another small step, my eyes unwavering from him. Don't do that. Heat radiates from him, hitting me from across the room as he says,
I killed her.
I stop mid-stride, my tippy toe on the floor, my heel raised, my pulse screaming through my veins to use that foot to run away. Clay.
I killed her.
He says again, each word punching the air. He starts to vibrate with rage, his eyes locked on mine, his anger brewing.
I made the tough call.
He preaches, chants, a line from a book or a story, and not his own natural words.
I weeded out betrayals. I made her liable. I protected my brothers. I
cover my mouth, gaping at him over my hands. He shoots to his feet, lunging for the bottle by the bedside, hurling it at the wall, the pieces shattering, the crash echoing down the hall. I jump back. He doesn't stop. He reaches for another, pelting it at the dress he fondly touched earlier, breaking the canister open, spilling its contents all over the fabric. He finds another. Then another. Another. And as he breaks the room apart, he breaks apart with it. Glass shards everywhere. His body shakes, exploding bottles. He growls through clenched teeth. But I'd walk through glass and fire and smoke for him. Through debris and ash, I have. I will again. I take a step towards him. He freezes for a moment. The destruction stops. He clenches his fist so tight his shoulder muscles bunch and bulge, grow, demonically. The strength in them protrudes from his suit.
Fuck!
It hurts. God. Clay. I reach forward, but he raises his hand to stop me. It hurts to see him so volatile, and yet I can handle his evil. I said I could. Tears find their ways into my eyes for him, not her. Always for him. And I know I should keep my distance, but I'm not afraid of my everything, even as his evil spills across the room. I walk towards him. He stays in one place, holding himself together, eyeing me from the side, panting like an animal barely restrained from a carnal urge. I reach for him. dragging his thick, defiant arm down so he can't block me with it. He twitches when I place my hand softly on his chest, his eyes snapping to me, pinning me in place with a warning. I gasp on a breath but stay close to him. I can be what he needs. I can handle your evil, sir. His jaw works.
No, I don't want that. Leave.
I can share it with you.
Stop.
You don't have to make the tough calls alone anymore. On my tippy toes now, I lean up and touch his jaw. The muscles beneath pulse angrily, pressing back at my palm, pushing me away. You are not alone.
Stop it.
He growls, staring sideways at me.
I did this. I planned Jimmy's execution. I ordered Dustin's. I may not always thrust the knife, but I damn well make the call. I'm fucking losing it.
His neck is tight, ridged down the column. I stay slow and tender, contradictory to his stiff and burning hot. You're not alone, Clay. I use his name, articulate it, make sure he hears me. Clay. He smiles bitterly, shaking his head.
A leader is always alone, Fawn.
My name. I tried a smile at him because he's so beautiful and I am so proud of the man he is for his family. He is breathtaking, even when he's breaking down the center, even as he loses all his classic control. And just like the rose needs the thorns, pretty things need ugly defenses. The thorns need the rose to reproduce, to keep existing, to spread their roots and ground them. We can lead together. He closes his eyes on a sigh.
Oh, impossible.
Why? I ask, and his gaze finds mine, settling in deep. The thorns need the rose too. I can raise your children. I can love them. I can love you too. And your brothers. I'll be here for them, and we can heal this family together. Don't you believe in me, sir? As I stroke upward towards his chiseled jaw, he snatches my wrist. I gasp, but refuse to break eye contact with him, even as he bends the small limb. He glares at me through his lashes, his chin high, his lips a straight cut across his face.
I killed my mother.
I nod, small. I know.
I drugged her, suffocated her.
He bites out, provoking.
Q will find her in the morning. Stage everything. Clean this room. It'll be an overdose. I'll get away with it like all the hundreds of others. Hundreds of deaths.
He squeezes my wrist.
At my hands. And my brothers can never know the truth. This is my evil. Do you understand? Mine. Do you understand what this life is with me, sweet girl?
My lungs strain. My life. He frowns.
You think you can handle that?
I look at his hand cuffing my wrist. I can.
Don't be what I need right now.
He says. Releasing my wrist as though I burn his palms, scorch through his muscles with my resilience, overpowering his brutal hold.
Not after what I just did.
I'm not hurt by that anymore. I admit, understanding him and the moment, understanding his bite, his need to taunt me with the evil inside him. He was taunting himself.
That was careless. Selfish.
No. It was honest. Real. And you want me to be appalled by it. Shocked. You're pushing me away even though you would never let me leave. What you don't realize is, I can handle your evil, Clay. Lifting to the tips of my toes again, I place my palms on either side of his neck and kiss him gently. His lips are tight, ready to hiss, but I find a groan in his mouth, and when he accepts my tenderness, I fill his clenched kiss with a moan of my own. I break away from our kiss, leading my lips down his throat, nervous, never having done this before. His hands come to my hair, gripping me hard with meaning and acceptance, with need. The harsh skin on his jaw chafes my lips in the most amazing, painful, and violent way. It matches his energy and the way I am willing to suffer it for the taste of him. You needed me, I say against his skin. You said so yourself. I can be what you need, whenever you need it. I can be the right woman for you, Clay Butcher. I can be your pretty little queen. Let me. He pushes me from his neck, ripping my lips away and bracketing my face for his harsh perusal. He stares down at me.
But you'll still be my sweet girl.
I pant below his deadly blue gaze. Yes. He bristles.
You won't become cold.
No.
A statue. Damn it, Fawn. You'll play with your kitten. Blush when you touch yourself, suck my cock to sleep, look at the goddamn moon and hang a dream catcher over our son's bed.
I feel the tears rising, finally attuned with why he doesn't want me to handle his evil, why he keeps me at arm's length when he's consumed by dark dealings. He doesn't want me to change. I am already the right woman for him. Did you think I'd just change all of a sudden?
Evil can change the very fibres of us, little dear.
But we know evil, sir. We know pain, trauma. For people like us, only love can change our fibres. I counter, holding his powerful blue gaze with my own, a smaller body in front of him, but a strong heart, a gentle touch, a submissive and a brat and his little dear.
And so much more, little dear.
We didn't grow up in the cotton wool love other children had. We didn't have love coming and going from people who filter in and out. We didn't have unconditional love from a mother. I hold his pained gaze. Our love is like a cocoon, sir. It only happens once, and the effect is irreversible. Months ago, I came in search of a dangerous man. I found the devil's prototype in a flawless dark suit, with clear blue eyes and dark hair, an aura larger than life and a kaleidoscope of colours. I can see it today, Mum. A man who kills brutally, fucks territorially, and hides his emotions deep within layers of smooth control. He is the Don of the Cosa Nostra, evil, beautiful, ruthless. But he's not the villain of my story. He is my everything.
Chapter 35. Clay. The police are here, boss. Q mentions through the closed bedroom door, and I slide my gaze across to where my sweet girl my powerful little dear, sleepily rolls from one shoulder to the other at the sound of his interruption. She stirs further. A tiny white kitten, Luna, paws around the bed, swatting at the rippling sheets. I sigh, watching Fawn's lashes feather her cheeks, her eyes batting open in slow, sleepy waves. No creature alive has ever been more perfect for a man like me. Resilience, survival, strength, innocence wrapped into a sweet, trim, flawless figure that reminds me that pretty things can survive, even in dark worlds. Q continues through the door, and I consider firing him for waking her. I won't. Not today, at least. And the press is outside. Lorna is talking to Mrs. Butcher. Mrs. Butcher, my wife. I look back at my reflection. Blue eyes like my mother's drilling holes through me. The eyes of blue stone from a marble statue that is unpleasant to embrace. Sweeping the black tie around my neck, I feed it down the collar of my black shirt. I suit myself in the clothes of a grieving son, a grieving family man.
Kudos, Satan.
I twist to see my little dear standing, naked but for her long, pearly blonde hair that curtains parts of her pert breasts but fails to cover her pebbled nipples that thrust through the strands. I lick my lips. A pussy, a delta between her thighs, lightly coated in pretty blonde hairs. I like her natural. She walks into the dressing room, approaching me with a sway of confidence that resonates in my cock. She glances quietly at the ottoman, and a flush of pink creeps up the slim column of her neck. After last night, after swallowing my evil, matching my resolve, and holding her own, I can't imagine existing without her close to handle my evil, to blush for me, to open for me, to hold me accountable to my brothers and to her. What did you just say, sweet girl? She stops beside me and cranes her neck up, a tiny 5'5" frame shadowed by my 6'5" form, her blonde brows furrow at the height difference. She glares at the length of me and makes a small hump sound. Then she walks away, returning quickly with a step. A grin ticks the corner of my mouth. She sets the step down and climbs onto it, only a few inches shorter than me now, but petite nonetheless. The new height makes her no less fragile from my perspective, but she lifts her chin for me to see how confident she is at my level. My sweet girl reaches across and adjusts my tie, a slight smile active on her lips.
I said, kudos, Satan.
She fusses with my tie, and I let her draw it out, my chest warm from the sweet curve on her lips. Smoothing it down for me, like I usually do, she nods resolutely. I know what I have to do for this beautiful girl who gifts me so much. I kneel before her. I won't be like your mother, and you won't be like mine. With the aid of the stool, my head meets her abdomen, and I cradle our unborn baby. My large hands cover her entire trim stomach. I am going to resign today. Take my leave. My mother's death seems a reasonable time to hand in my notice.
But what?
I refuse to miss a moment of your life, sweet girl. I want all your time, all your firsts, all your experiences. I won't settle for anything less. Her hands fall to the back of my head, her delicate fingers combing the strands soothingly. I expect her to beam, bounce, to accept my offering, but she counters it.
And you're going to divorce Aurora? You wanted a list of what I want? I have one for you now.
I stifle a grin against her abdomen. Go on. She takes an exaggerated breath, strength hiding hints of sweet hesitation. I adore this girl's coy strength, her tiny voice and her big one.
This is the list. I want you to marry me. Happily ever after for Fawn Butcher. And I won't settle for anything less.
She repeats my words.
Cassidy, Shoshana and Jasmine will be my bridesmaids. Aurora will be my maid of honour. I am going to find my accomplishments in being a good mother and wife, and you're going to let me handle all the moments you struggle to handle alone. You will let me handle your evil.
Amused and impressed, I stand, her arms lifting, her hands settling either side of my neck. I lock eyes with her, deadly serious as I say. Anything else?
Yes. I want you to teach me to drive. Oh, and I want to go back to Dubai. I want to see the entire city, every inch of it.
I fight that damn grin. Is that all? She thinks, chewing her lower lip.
For now.
I muse before saying. And I promised to give you everything you want, didn't I, sweet girl?
Yes, sir.
She holds my stare.
You did.
Drinking in her dual-coloured eyes, one cloudy blue, the other green, I nod an order to her. She raises her chin at my silent command, and I finally lose to the smirk building across my lips. And you know what my evil looks like now, little dear? She turns to gaze at me in the mirror, panning my body, measuring me intimately, while my eyes stay on her, not wanting to be anywhere else. Beside me, at my level, she is naked, exposed, inviting, and utterly glowing with certainty. With sweet, humble confidence that sparks a hue of crimson beneath her pretty white cheeks.
It looks like everything I ever wanted, sir.
Good girl.
Thank you for listening to His Pretty Little Queen, written by Nikki Harris, narrated by Shane East and Sophia Lett, produced by East House Productions, production coordination by Josephine Lewis, published by Inky Publishing. Copyright 2023, Nikki Harris and Inky Publishing. All rights reserved. Are you obsessed? You can find other Butcher Boy fans in the official home of the Butcher Boys, Nikki's Facebook reader group, Harris's harem of dark romance-loving brats. Now, be very good and leave Sir and his little dear a review.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.